scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get this hour underway. It is Friday, January 10th, and we're underway on Flames Talk this hour on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. It is the Eric Francis Hour every Friday. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joins us here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan for a full hour, as he does right now. And boy, do we have a ton to talk about, EF, from Connor Zary to the long-awaited Rory Karens recall, midway through the season, your Q&A with Craig Conroy, our chat that we had with Craig Conroy last hour, all of that. Yeah, that's not even going to lead us off, because we want to lead it off talking about Rasmus Anderson. It's it's all of a sudden a busy time around Flames land. How we doing, my friend?
We are indeed right in the thick of it, and lots of storylines. And, you know, I think we've said this before. Whatever the fate of the Flames was going to be this year, I think a lot of people wondered, you know, if they could challenge for a playoff spot. Obviously, they have so far at the midway point, or the 48.5% way through, or whatever you guys were saying.
Yeah.
But the storylines have been plentiful, and that's one thing that hasn't changed all season long. Whether it's the kids on, you know, down below, or the team itself, there's been no shortage of, you know, kind of exciting developments for Flames fans, I would say. So that's a good thing, and that gives us something to talk about, especially today.
Well, tell us about what you wrote about on this Friday, EF, a chat with Rasmus Anderson, and some added flair from the general manager as well. This one's available at sportsnet.ca right now. Tell us about your latest.
Well, he wants to stay. He wants to remain a Calgary Flame, not just this year, next year, but hopefully even beyond. He said those words. The question is, you know, or I guess the thing is, it's easier said than done. You need two willing dance partners. I do believe the Calgary Flames would be very interested in signing him long-term. We can debate the merits of that, pro and con. But I will say the best quote he had today, I thought, was, "I love playing here and I've always loved playing here, and that's never going to change. I hate the Oilers. I hate the Canucks, and that's just the way I am." I think that is just magical. And, you know, he's a fan favorite here. That doesn't mean everybody wants him here long-term. I get that. But I do think that I'm in camp. See what you can do to sign him long term for a lot of different reasons. But the number one is, like, what an incredible turning point for this franchise to be able to keep a UFA, like a significant cornerstone UFA who's your number one defenseman, and keep him here long term instead of losing him like so many other guys over the last couple of years. So, you know, lots of reasons to want him to stay, I think. But the bottom line was today he said, you know, and I had had a chat with Craig Conroy in L.A. or Anaheim, I guess. And I said, have you had that conversation yet with Rasmus? And he said, what do you mean, what conversation? I said, like, look, I'm not saying has he committed to signing an extension July 1st or anything like that. I said, like, do you at least know his intentions? And I think that's an important conversation, because if you got to this point of the season or very soon, and I heard Craig say with your interview just now, we're going to have those talks soon. But the talks that he needs to have, I think, in both sides, is just like, hey, you happy? Are we happy? And both kind of paid lip service to that in my column today. They are very happy. But if Rasmus were to say in a little private chat, you know, with the two of them, yeah, I'm happy, but I'm not sure we're going to be able to get there. Like, I can't imagine many players would ever say that and close that door, but at least just have a feel for one another, just so that, because what if Rasmus had decided in his heart of hearts that he definitely won't re-sign here? He just needs a new start somewhere else, or, you know, the grass is greener in his mind. Well, then I think you're, as a Calgary Flame general manager, I think you are thinking about the possibility of trading Rasmus Anderson this year. I really don't think after the conversations I just had with both of them that that's even a possibility this year. Now, I should put a caveat on that. If this team tanks over the next month and just falls right out of the race, then I think anything's possible. But I think the way things have gone this year and the way Rasmus has been empowered into being a true leader of this team, playing right. more minutes, more important roles, I think that's meant the world to his happiness. I think he's a really proud guy. I think when he was challenged in the summer and told, look, you're probably unhappy right now. We traded some of your Swedish buddies. We traded some cornerstones. But we need you to step up and be part of the solution, not the problem. And he's done that. And I think he takes great pride in that. And I think he's done it really well. And I think that's been the big difference. I think that's, you could have easily seen a sulking Rasmus Anderson this year because he's a very emotional guy. And when things aren't going well around here, he wears it, you know, on his sleeve. But I think things have been going well because he's wanted them to go well and put a hell of an effort into making them go well. So I think kudos to him for being that good and giving and making this conversation possible, really, because if he's not playing that well, then it's a totally different tone that we're taking.
It's one of the real interesting conversations, because I even go back to, you know, hearing from Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm and Chris Tanev, who all said they also were open to staying.
Yes.
And wanted. Uh-huh. And I'm not trying to suggest that Rasmus doesn't, because I read the pieces and I've read the quotes and listening to Conroy. Like I'm not suggesting that at all, but I think the interesting part where he talks about it is a business and talks about how, you know, it's not fully in his control, all those types of things. I think it just adds to the intrigue, is that I do believe that he enjoys it here, loves being here, and I'm glad that he said those words that he wants to stay. But you know, there's always, what did Brad Treliving always say, right? Like like we're super interested. You know, all comes down to his money and term, right? Like the two things.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going to be really interesting as we move forward here, if we do move into Rasmus Anderson contract talks in the summertime. You know, is there a middle ground to be found? Are we talking about two sides that can find something? Because I'm with you. I think that all things being equal and ideally for the organization, I believe signing him, extending him is the way to go, because I think it sends an important message. I think he's the type of player that you want to go forward with. I think that you always prioritize guys that you drafted and developed, especially if they turn into high-end players, which Rasmus has. But I'm curious to see how many twists and turns something like this might have over the next, say, 8 to 12 months.
Listen, I don't think for a second that there's any chance, like I'm putting it at zero, that he signs on July 1st. Look, I think today's day, with it's very well publicized that the cap is going to continue to go up over the next couple of years and at quite an accelerated rate by all accounts. Like, why would any player that's a heavily sought after player, like, you know, a fringe player or, you know, a lesser player than Rasmus Anderson, sure, go ahead and fill your boots, sign and get that security. Rasmus Anderson is already set for life with the money he's made as a Calgary Flame. But B, if he waits another year, everything goes up. A rising tide floats all boats. Every agent will tell every player like Rasmus Anderson that. Why would he sign this summer when he can wait and leverage himself even more as we get closer to the deadline, stuff like that? At some point, the organization says, okay, wait, we need to know, like, now and negotiate now and figure this out. And maybe the risk is, you know, you wait too late and you cost yourself some assets. There's definitely that risk. But Calgary Flames are trying to make the playoffs this year. I just cannot see, if they stay in this race, how they could ever part with their number one defenseman. Like, conversely, I don't think that sends a very good message.
Right.
But also, you know, why would he sign this summer? And I always say these numbers things. These are Ryan Pike things. But, you know, is he a $9 million defenseman times 8 years? Like, I think that'll make a lot of people cringe. But with this cap continuing to go up, I think, a year and a half from now, that may very well be the number. And you know, this summer, if they tried to sign him, I bet they, you know, the number they'd offer wouldn't be nine. It would be a lot less than that. So I just don't see them coming to terms this summer. I feel like this will wait until next season. My gut feeling, I don't even know if I want to go there. I don't even know if I want to go with what my gut is.
Okay.
I guess if I'm honest, my gut is that he won't be here because we've seen that act so much before. That would mean that he'd be traded at next year's deadline and he'd be, you know, a free agent in the summer, you know, two summers from now. So that's my gut feeling. And hey, you're right. Like every athlete, you have to say you want to be here. I do believe him when he says he's happy and he loves it here and he's always going to be, you know, always will have been happy to be here. But he said that comment about hating the Oilers and the Canucks, his next quote was, "Of course I'd love to stay here, but I've heard from everyone else who's been in my situation that it's a business."
Yeah.
And don't forget, two of his best friends are Jacob Markstrom and Elias Lindholm, who've both been through this. And Hannah Finn was a good friend, and Tanev. So, you know, I don't know what the future holds, and a lot has to change, has to happen between now and whenever he may sign. And the Calgary Flames may continue to be a playoff team in that time, which would give him at least a chance of wanting to stay. Because if this team falls out of the playoff race this year, it's going to be a sour Rasmus Anderson for the last couple months. And if next year doesn't go very well for the Calgary Flames, which I'm not saying it will, but if it does, that would make it even harder for him to want to stay long term.
It's such a fascinating thing because I also think about how we're talking about you and I being on the same page and you and I kind of thinking the same way when it comes to what would probably be best and why we believe keeping Anderson would be the way to go if all things are equal. But there is a large contingent of Flames fans who look at it the other way and a large contingent of Flames fans who believe like, hey, here's a guy that for a team that's trying to get younger, for a team that's trying to go in a different direction, for a team that wants to be, you know, at a certain spot in 3 to 5 years' time, well, this is a guy that can really help get them there in that regard. And you see a lot of that. And I just don't want to discount that part of it. As much as I am not that's not where I am. My belief is I think signing him long-term is the way to go if you can find a deal that is fair and if you can find a deal that makes sense for both sides, which I think is very realistic. But there are a lot of people who aren't on that same wavelength. But it's not because they don't like Rasmus. It's just because of the situation, the age, the player, and the team's lot in life right now. And I find that whole part of it really interesting is that there is a very vocal group of fans who don't believe that extending him is the way to go.
And I don't. It's not that I think they're crazy. I think there's merit to some of the arguments. I mean, as I was laying out when I was writing this, like, you know, he's 28 right now. He's definitely going to want that 8 years, the full 8 years. And, you know, he's a pending UFA, so he can basically, I don't use the word demand it, but he can basically say that that's the hill I'm willing to die on. Like, you know, I'm not settling for a couple of years less because on the open market, I think I'll get my full 7 years somewhere else. But there are a bevy of young defensemen in the hopper right now. They're all really, really young. But you know, you've invested significant assets, significant resources into drafting these guys and trading for them. It doesn't guarantee any of them are going to pan out, but, you know, that's one good strength. The other is that, you know, Mackenzie Weegar's 31 and already still has, what, 6-7 years left on his deal. And so, you know, and you got Kevin Ball as well. He's young. You're going to have him for quite a long time. It's not as simple as, hey, let's sign this guy because he's our number one defenseman.
Right.
And he's a good soldier. We drafted him. It sends a good message. It helps us build our team for our new building and moving forward. The age factor is very significant. And a lot of people would wonder, and I've heard this argument, you know, how does that contract age for a guy like Rasmus Anderson? Like, you know, I think he's in great shape right now. It doesn't matter. I mean, lots of guys are in great shape, but when you get to be 36, 37, are you still in great shape? Or you know, how does this contract age? It's a very significant one. So it's an interesting debate, and we're going to hear lots of it. But at least I would like to think that after what, you know, Wes and I wrote today, that after our conversations with Conroy and with Rasmus, that at least we could kind of put to bed the notion that he could get traded this year. Like, I was talking to my editor in Toronto, and he says, we're just putting together our trade board for next week. Should we take Anderson off it? I said, yeah, I do think you should. I never agreed with him being on it
right
in the first place. I you know, I get it. It's part of the game. It's entertainment. And I guess, theoretically, it's still a possibility. So I'm sure all these trade boards will still continue to have Rasmus Anderson on there. But I hope that when they do, they put some of his words up there and also explain that he's just that important to this team right now. And losing him this year while they're in the thick of a playoff race is absolutely not an option in my mind.
Yeah, never really. This year never really felt like, despite, you know, many who have felt like this should be the way they go, this year has never felt like the time for me because, and I guess that just comes down to the fact that Eric, like, my opinion hasn't changed on this going back to last year or the summertime or whatever. You know, I've been pretty adamant that, you know, retaining and extending is the way to go, should be the way to go, and if there's desire on the player's side, then the Flames should, you know, do what it takes, within reason, but do what it takes to make sure that Rasmus is locked up. And so it's always been kind of where I'm at. It's like, well, the only time you trade him is in that final year when you've got an idea that maybe this isn't going to happen.
Gonna work.
Or, you know, you're not getting traction. Like, similar to what happened when they moved Elias Lindholm, and that kind of started off the entire domino set of all the trades they made there in the first, you know, 3 months or so of 2024. That's kind of how I look at it with Anderson. And you know, Unless you get explicitly told this summer that, hey, I'm probably not going to re-sign here, then I don't think you really need to start exploring that type of stuff until well into next season. And I know that not everybody's on that same page, but that's kind of where I've always been, is that, hey, if you're going to trade this guy, why are we talking about it right now when he still has another full year on his contract? And the rebuttal has been, well, because you can maximize even more value coming back. But I just think there's a lot of value in him staying around for this push, for the rest of this season, and on top of that, for the long term. But even if they don't trade him this year and it ends up being that they have to move him next year, I still think keeping him in the fold, to your point, is the way to go, because, you know, there's definite, especially knowing they're probably not going to drop well into the high stages of the lottery, you know, that there's a lot of, I think, value that could be gleaned from this team making the playoffs.
That's right. Look, like, they traded Toffoli and Markstrom in the offseason. I thought they were pretty happy with the return they got in both cases. You know, I guess, like you say, diminishing returns the longer you wait. And I guess that stands to reason, but it still can happen in the off season, and you can fare just as well. As a matter of fact, I often argue that in the summer is probably the best time to make a trade, because teams have money then, and they're making their plans, and they're building everything. At the trade deadline, you're handcuffed in a lot of cases, you know, because so many teams are up against the cap. And I think, I'm not sure if people knew this or not, but, you know, in my piece, Rasmus is the one who brings it up, and that he's only has trade protection against six teams. So he can only submit a six-team list that he won't go to. And I'm guessing Vancouver and Edmonton are on that list.
The interesting thing is one of the many interesting things. So he's at 4.55 right now as his current cap hit. Like, what does a long-term extension look like? Are we talking about 8 years? $9 million? Are we talking about 8 years, $12 million? And I don't think it's that high, but everybody's so concerned now about, and rightfully so, about the cap and how much it's going up and all that type of stuff. Like, I think Rasmus Anderson's turned himself into a top 25, top 30 defenseman in the NHL. He's clearly a top pair guy. What does that type of player go for in the summer of 2025, especially if the cap goes into triple digits next year, all that type of stuff? Like, that's the other really interesting part. I know you mentioned Pike when we were talking about that earlier, but, like, what does a contract look like for Rasmus Anderson if he signs max term here in Calgary? And I don't even know how easy that is to pin down.
Yeah, because it's such a moving target, and this conversation now is – it's irrelevant now to even throw out numbers. I mean, I will, but it's irrelevant to throw them out now, because in a year from now, when we're probably more likely talking about them actually getting down to the crunch time and starting to figure out the numbers, you know, I do think it would be radically different a year from now, because so many different guys are going to get signed this summer as UFAs. And don't forget, you have to treat them like a UFA, because that's the kind of contract you're signing him to. Yeah, you get to sign him for an extra year because you're the team that owns his rights at this point in time, but you still have to pay open market dollars to keep him here. And to me, that starts with a nine, probably, you know, by the time we roll around to a next year, I do feel like it's probably a nine. And I think a lot of people, like I said earlier, would be completely taken aback by that and going, oh my Lord, he's not a $90 million player. Well, we're going to have to get more and more used to players being $8, $9 million players, because the cap is going up. Remember, for the longest time, a top four defenseman in the league, the going rate, even if you were the number four, was $5 million
a year.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, kudos, you know, hey, when GMs leave, everybody rips them and says, yeah, thanks a lot, Tree Living, for leaving us with that deal where we're going to, you know, I hear Flames fans all the time about the first rounder they're probably going to have to give up to Montreal this summer, you know, And you know, deals that leave the Flames in a bad spot. That was one of his, you know, handful of really good signings. You know, locking Rasmus Anderson up,
yeah,
early in his career, taking a chance on him for sure, but the payout being that you got him for $4.55 million for all these years. Like, it won't be hard to trade him if that's the route they go a year from now, because that's easy to fit into a cap space. Like, for almost any team in the league, you can make that money work, no problem.
See, like, they're talking about the cap going up maybe to $100 million for next year. So say it goes up to $105 million for the summer of 2026. And I just took this example because it's kind of one of the examples everybody talks about now when, you know, talking about defense contracts. Everybody points to Darnell Nurse and 9.25, right? And so when Darnell signed his deal, he was 11.6% of the cap. Well, if you were to take $105 million, let's just ballpark it there and multiply that. Like, if Anderson wants to play hardball, well, then we're talking about him at $12 million. That's 11% of a $105 million cap. And I know that that's how a lot of agents are going to be negotiating,
yeah,
is not so much on dollar figure, but on percentages. Is, okay, well, player X and player Y, you sign them to X amount of your cap in 2019 or 2021 or whatever the date may be. Well, you know, that we think the players are comparable, so percentage of the cap for that player was this much. Well, it's... that's what we want for our player, but the dollar figure now translates to this. And that's another really interesting angle to this whole thing is, you know, if they wanted to go that direction, well, then maybe we are talking about this guy in double digits somewhere.
Yeah. You know, again, these numbers kind of gobsmack you right now, but in a year from now, the whole world changes.
Yeah.
There was a time when we used to, you know, we had been gobsmacked at, like I said, a $5 million player, but now it's, you know, now that's... That's very old school thinking. So that's actually very interesting the way you talk about the percentages and using Darnell Nurse as the benchmark, which, you know, agents have absolutely delighted in doing over the last little while. It's going to be very, very expensive to sign Rasmus Anderson. Hey, you got to spend the money. And the Calgary Flames, Lord knows by then, by next summer, they already have over almost $20 million in cap space. By next year, it's going to be significantly more. So, you know, depending on what they do, of course. But, it's not going to be easy to sign them, and it's not going to be cheap. But this organization has always believed in building from the back end. And the thought of trading away your number one defenseman has got to be scary, or losing him is got to be very – that's a big deal, because as everybody always says, soon as you trade him, what are you going to be looking for the most?
Yeah.
You're going to be looking for the exact same guy, but maybe just hope he's
well,
5 years
younger.
Well,
that was your argument. It's so funny. That was your argument when you wrote the Hanifin piece.
Hanifin,
like
yeah.
A year ago. It was probably about 100%. A year ago right now, right?
Yep, exactly. And what was the offer that was out there for Hanifin? You have that steel trap memory.
Oh, I think it was 8.5, if I remember correctly, or maybe just under 8, something like that was what we were talking about.
8 times 8 years, and the rumor was that was, you know, out there offered to him, and then they pulled it when the team started going sideways. But yeah, so if he's $8 million and he wasn't a top pairing defenseman, again. Like I say, every year that the cap keeps going up, so it changes the numbers completely. But basically, looking, if Hanifin's an $8 million defenseman and Anderson's been your top defenseman for, what, 3, maybe 4 years now,
yeah,
and is kind of taking an even a bigger stride now in terms of ice time, you know, I don't think his points are up to the same – he's not on the same pace as last year, but goals, he's been pretty well. You could easily start to think about how this is a 9-10 – plus $1 million player. And I know that makes a lot of people cringe. So it's an interesting debate. You know, Wes and I were talking about it a little bit earlier, and I do agree. This is one of the most contentious. This will be one of the big debates amongst Flames fans. It already is. And as a matter of fact, it's funny because I always tell you, I never read the comments, but as soon as I posted this piece, I saw two guys going at it on my timeline, my feed afterwards. I just happened to notice it. And it resorted to name calling because they both vehemently disagreed on what they should do with this defenseman. So that's symbolic of the way a lot of people feel in this city. Some are for, some are against.
The last thing before we hit our first pause here, you know, you had that road trip last year where you knocked off like 4 or 5 just exclusive bangers, and I think you spoke to Hanifin and a good chunk of, I think Markstrom was in there about his future. Like you spoke to a good chunk of guys about, you know, what comes next and what the future looks like. When you spoke with Rasmus today, did you get a similar feel? Did you get a different feel? I'm just curious as to, you spoke to a lot of guys who ended up getting traded last year. What was, and Rasmus a little bit different because he still has a year left on his deal, but how would you compare kind of the tone and tenor of the conversations?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess I'll answer by saying this. There was never any doubt to me that Tanev was gone. There was never any doubt in my mind that Markstrom was going to leave. Or wanted out,
yeah.
They'd have to trade him, and also to make room for Wolf. I mean, we all knew that was coming. So even though those two guys and everybody say all the right things, and I'd like to stay, but you know, business is business. Those ones, you could tell that they didn't kind of mean it. They might have meant it, but I knew where it was going to end. Hanifin, I was never really sure, and I can tell you, I've spoken to Hanifin since. He was never really sure along the whole way, too. So,
yeah.
And Johnny ended up being the same way at the deadline, or at the very end, too, and just couldn't make his mind up, even though I think for the long haul he knew he was leaving. But I think he had a bit of a change of heart after that playoff run and that playoff goal, and I think he almost thought about staying. We know how close it was, and then at the last second decided to change his mind. But, you know, And Tkachuk, of course, we all knew that. That's a whole separate. We knew he was gone for a lot of years, too. But with this one, I believe him that he would like to stay. But my gut, like, again, tells me it'll end up a lot like Tanev, Lindholm, Markstrom, where he'll make it pretty clear at some point that the numbers aren't going to mesh, and I want to explore what's out there, and he'll be gone. He'll have to be traded. So
okay. That's
my gut. And, you know, I think for – yeah, whether that's good or bad for the organization in the big picture, I don't know. But that's how my gut tells me it's going to go.
That conversation with Rasmus Anderson is available for you right now at sportsnet.ca. You also had a Q&A with Craig Conroy that we'll get to. Connor Zary's injury news is nowhere near as bad as it could have been. Rory Karrant has been recalled. All of that still to come. It's the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis from Sportsnet and sportsnet.ca on Twitter at Eric Francis with us for the entire hour. My name is Pat Steinberg. Flames Talk's available wherever you get your podcasts. I'm here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome in the Hot Stove Lounge, but everything is being produced back downtown at the Groundworks Downtown Studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's the Eric Francis Hour with Eric Francis of Sportsnet and sportsnet.ca. My name is Pat Steinberg. I'm here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome as we continue along on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. Just before we get into some other things around this team, EF, you were one of the people scrambling to get out of SoCal earlier this week. Just take us through Tuesday, Wednesday in Anaheim and then Los Angeles and then kind of the whole ordeal as the Flames tried to get out in time and you weren't able to get home until Thursday.
Yeah, you know, like, hey, it's not like I was in the thick of it, but you know, the ash was falling downtown when we were walking into Crypto.com the day of the what was supposed to be the game day. They were handing out masks at Crypto.com. Most people were wearing them all over town because the smoke was thick. And, like, even in my hotel room, it smelled like smoke. And then when you walked out of the hotel, it was really, obviously, very significant. I would say more significant than anything we ever kind of experienced through those fires, you know, here over the last couple summers.
Yeah.
But it was just, and there were pieces of ash that were falling that were like over an inch and a half thick. I've never fathomed that I've ever seen something like that because the fires are really about 25 miles away from the downtown core from where we were. So I never felt unsafe, but I will say at one point when I drove in from Anaheim after the game on Tuesday night, got in around midnight, and a guy got into the elevator with me. And we'd started to see all these incredible images on TV as this all unfolded very quickly. And guy said, "Hey, man, you mind if I ride up in the elevator with you?" And I said, "Yeah, no problem. You got a bottle of wine. Let's go have a drink, jokingly. And he said, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure my house is burning to the ground as we speak." And boy, did that hit me hard. Like, just see him, the look in his eyes, and he just said, "We just fled. They told us we had to get out. We had like 10 minutes to pack our car. We grabbed every animal that we could, all of our animals. And we're in the room right now. And my wife and I are watching on TV, seeing if we can see our house burning down." Oh, uh-huh. And then as the days went on, like the next day, my hotel absolutely filled up with families that had been displaced by the fire. And that was hard to see too, because there were little kids crying in the lobby and there were, you know, there were animals in their crates, and there are lots of animals everywhere, pets, and so sad. Like, you know, I've been glued to it. I don't know how many people are watching this all that closely, but the stories are incredible, and I think the one thing nobody really quite understands unless they watch all the footage is people, like, so many people just assume they were safe, and then literally within sometimes a matter of 5 or 10 minutes, their life changed. And they had to run for their lives. So,
yeah,
pretty kind of surreal to be around that. And when I flew out yesterday morning, you know, we flew over all the fires, and that was really, you know, we've all seen those shots from space or from up high at how, you know, the scope and the size, but to see it yourself looking out your plane was tough. Yeah. Feel really bad for a lot of people, man. That's a devastating story.
No doubt. While we know the Flames Kings will be rescheduled at some point, and we don't know how many additional Kings games may have to be moved. So far, none, because LA is now on the road, but we'll see how that all plays itself out. That was supposed to be the midway mark of the season for the Flames on Wednesday night. Now the midway mark of the season will also be against LA, but it'll be on Saturday. as the Flames are now, you know, approaching the midway mark of the season, a little bit under 49% done their season now, 40 of 82 in the books. And, you know, Craig Conroy joined Flames Talk in the first hour on this Friday to do a bit of a first half review. I know you spoke with him as well, and that column came out on Wednesday, I believe, your Q&A with Craig Conroy and his kind of thoughts on the first half. Anything in particular that has jumped out to you when hearing from the general manager about the first half of the season and what the second half might hold here?
You know, I think what stuck out is just when I asked him to characterize the first half, it was nothing but positives. And, you know, I wonder if you asked, you know, all the other GMs whose teams were in a playoff race, if they would be full of so many positives, like for example, like, you know, Boston, are they going to sit there and tell you it's been nothing but positives in the first half of the season, even though they're in a playoff spot right now? Like, you know, they would say no, because everyone's got different standards and different expectations. But I think coming from a place where expectations were low from the outside anyway, he's just thrilled with everything and the way everything's developed and how his plan's kind of starting to come together and youngsters are developing and teams in a playoff race. And, you know, certain players are starting to really blossom, like Connor Zary, you know, was before his injury. You know, the goaltending has been a huge story. The fact that there's Huberdeau and Kadri have shown some chemistry and started to score some goals is a significant development for this organization, one they probably weren't sure they'd ever see, maybe. So, he's thrilled with a lot of things. That kind of stuck out with me, just, wow, yeah. In his eyes, and the way this season was supposed to be set up, this season has been a very, very positive half season so far. We'll see where it goes. But for now, you couldn't really ask for more if you're the Calgary Flames, other than maybe, you know, more goals. And sure, there's Kuzmenko's a massive, massive setback for him and for the team. It's not all roses, but there are a lot of roses in this bouquet so far.
Yeah, it's been a real positive season, and they kind of, in a lot of ways, got, look, what happened on Tuesday night with that knee-on-knee hit with Connor Zary and Drew Helison, like, there wasn't going to be good news from that. There was just going to be bad news and worse news, but I think that if you're the Flames, you can breathe somewhat of a sigh of relief when you see the release that says that he's not going to need surgery. He's going to be out indefinitely. Craig Conroy told us here on Flames Talk that, yeah, he's not going to be back in the immediate future, but he's going to be back this season. That, based on how it looked and how ominous that was on Tuesday night, again, I don't know if you want to call it good news, but boy, there sure is a whole lot worse than it could have been when it comes to Connor Zary, hey?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, I think that's the big thing. You just wanted to hear that it wasn't an ACL or an MCL, or that it wasn't something that would require a surgeon to repair. So, yeah, so great news, you know, kind of along the lines of what I was just saying. It seems like things have really fallen into place in so many different ways with these guys. And I would argue he's their best forward this year. I really would. I know the point. He doesn't have all the points that you would think would come with being the best, but I think he's the most dynamic. I think, man, in terms of zone entries, nobody's better on this team than him. Controlling the puck, nobody controls it more or better than he does on this team. And so that he'll be missed terribly. But, you know, everybody's excited also about Rory Cairns. And, well, going back to Zary, I didn't think the hit was egregious, and I'm, you know, I think I've been kind of proven right, because the league hasn't suspended anything. To me, 5-10 in a game misconduct was punishment enough for a hit that had a catastrophic potentially outcome. But I don't think it was ill intent. There was ill intent there. I don't think it was malicious. I don't think it was dirty. Did you see it the same way? Because, you know, I'm there at the rink, and I got to go on in the intermission 10 minutes after it's happened.
Yeah.
And talk about it. And, you know, there's a lot of emotion for a lot of people when it comes to those things. And people around me were a little upset about it. I wasn't. What were your thoughts on the hit itself?
So I don't want to say back and forth, but I've kind of gone all over the place on this one. At first I was like, you know, what's Helison supposed to do in that situation? Like, how do you let up? How do you avoid the knee on knee contact? But, you know, I've talked to a lot of people have played. I've talked to a lot of people who have been in situations either as the defender or the player with the puck. And, you know, I don't think it was dirty. I don't mind that there was no supplemental discipline when it's all said and done. I do think more than anything else, it was an unfortunate play. The only thing I would have liked to see, and Drew Helison, I think, had 20 NHL games prior to the game against Calgary on Tuesday. So we're talking about a guy who's still very, very inexperienced at this level. This is much easier said than done from the person who's not playing the fastest game on earth. But, you know, you see guys like Jacob Trouba, who just happens to be Helison's teammate, or you see open ice hitters on the on the Flames, like Mackenzie Weegar can lay some big hits, or Braden Pahal. You know, you see those guys do a good job of, I don't want to say bailing out, but they've got a good idea as to when to keep following through and when not to. And it felt like Helison was trying to blow Zeri up, which is fine. You know, he made chest, like shoulder to chest contact right around the same time, if not before, the two knees collided. So he was trying to deliver a clean hit but blow up a guy with the puck. But what you'll see guys who are a little bit more experienced in this league do is they know that there's a chance that a guy's going to cut, and then they know to let off a little bit so that they can avoid that knee-on-knee contact, because, you know, they've been there before and they've thrown big hits before. And so had Helison been able to do that a little bit, maybe his leg isn't as flexed and isn't as solid, and thus the impact on Zeri is a whole lot less severe than it was. That's kind of my only criticism of the play, was that could he have let up like other experienced guys do? Maybe, but I think at the same time, EF, that comes with experience, right?
Yeah, fair. I think that's a fair comment, too. I really do. You know, we didn't hear a thing from the league, which tells you they looked at it, but I didn't see anything other than, you know, what the ruling was on the ice. And, hey, I rode the elevator down with Don Maloney and Craig Conroy, and I asked them right after the game, and they were both kind of like, I don't know. You know, they weren't really sure either. And a lot of people who have seen it 10, 20, 30 times still also don't really know where they'd really find fault with it, other than to just say, It's terrible the way it ended. And so I guess we leave it at that and we move forward. But I in terms of Rory Karens, I want to say, and you and I had this discussion today at practice. He filled in for Backlund today because Backlund was, taking a maintenance day. But I don't think we're going to see Karens tomorrow. I think I don't want to put words in your mouth. I don't think you think that we're going to see Karens tomorrow. Sharon Govich was playing on that other line. With Pelche and
Kuzmenko.
Kuzmenko, on that third line. So I think it's pretty much set in stone that Sharangovich is going to play center tomorrow on that third line. Karens is going to watch. And my guess is that it's because they're playing a team with such big, strong, established centermen. And I think they want to shield Karens' first game in terms of being up against a juggernaut like that. Do you read it the same way?
I do. I think that, and even Ryan Huska said it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I just think they wanted to get him into a practice, get him through a game day morning skate. Like I think they want to make sure that they're putting him in to a spot where, hey, maybe he can hit the ground running. And I would suggest that on the road in Chicago versus at home against L.A. is probably a better way of doing that. And so, yeah, it didn't look like he was going to be in at practice. I do believe that they part of the idea was let's bring him up, get him into a practice, and the coaching staff can evaluate how he looked in practice and then make a call. So I do think there was a little bit of that going on. But yeah, my my gut says I'm with you. I don't think he plays on Saturday against LA. I'd be circling that Monday game at United Center in Chicago as a much more realistic spot where maybe he makes his NHL debut. But he's going to get in. And I guess I would say if he's not in Saturday night against Los Angeles, I don't think there needs to be any panic alerts or alarm bells or anything like that. They're not bringing him up to sit. They want to put him in a top nine role. They want to put him in and see if he can excel kind of in a spot that makes sense and fits his skill set. So I think that's what we're going to be talking about when he gets into the lineup. It just may not be on Saturday night.
Yeah, and we're also fascinated to see how he assimilates, right? I mean, didn't even get an exhibition game. This is a story. He's come out of nowhere to earn this chance. He certainly earned it. But whether or not he can have an impact, I think it probably struck a lot of us the body type that he has. I'm not sure you would look at him normally if you saw him on the street and say, yeah, that's an NHL centerman, in terms of height and body type. But I think that, he's overcome all that to be the leading scorer in American Hockey League with 21 goals. So deserves a chance. Totally need to see him in there. People are excited about it. And, I know in people's minds, they're hoping it's just another chapter in this ongoing building process that saw Pospisil and Zeri do it last year. And they're hoping he's, on that same list as guys like Braden Pahal as well, who get that chance and make good on it. But again, I don't think people should be discouraged if he comes up and he has no impact, gets sent back down. Well, at least they have a little bit of a taste, and he'll have a little bit of a taste in terms of what he needs to work on.
Get out of here, buddy. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. We'll see you Saturday for the Flames and Kings, hey?
You know it, my man. We'll see you then. Thanks. Cheers.
He is Eric Francis on Twitter at Eric Francis. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. It's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and that'll wrap us up this hour on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.